From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made every day in a part of Rochester that endures some of the most extreme poverty in the city. In parts of Rochester, young mothers wonder what services are available for their children. Residents wonder how to get to work if they can find a job. Some are concerned about finding a warm meal. They worry about medicine for the elderly or places to play for the young. That's just the start of where the Baden Street settlement comes in. Baden Street has touched thousands of lives, but the reality of poverty in Rochester is persistent, and it can be devastating. Our city has some of the highest levels of child poverty in the country, some of the highest levels of extreme poverty, meaning people living at less than half the poverty line. Baden Street has been around for 118 years, and this is their stated mission today. Quote, "The goal is to pursue the elimination of the causes of poverty and to reduce the level of negative social problems associated with being disadvantaged," end quote. They'll soon hold their annual community meeting and luncheon, and they'd love for you to attend. We'll tell you how you can do that. This hour, we'll discuss their work. We'll dig into the challenges that our community faces and how Baden Street is trying to help overcome them. Our guests in studio include Gaynell Weathers, Director of Planning and Development for Baden Street Settlement. Welcome back to the program. Nice having you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Pam Jackson is a former director of the Activities After School Programs Department at Baden Street Settlement. Nice to have you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Also with us is Mr. Hardy. Theodore Hardy is known as Mr. Hardy, a board member, a longtime supporter of Baden Street Settlement, and a user of Baden Street's senior services. Mr. Hardy, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And also with us is Sarah Cheek, a parent of a child in Baden Street Settlement's preschool program. Thank you for being here, Sarah.
Thank you for having me.
How old is your child?
He's 4 years old.
How's he doing?
He's doing well.
Well, I'm sure we'll have a lot to share with that. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Watching them grow, it's amazing. And all of the things that go into that. Well, Gaynell, I just want to start with you here because as you get ready to celebrate 118 years, you've got a big event coming up on Thursday.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, first of all, I'd like to always honor our founders, Teresa Katz and Fannie Mae Garson. These women were from Temple Beth Kodesh. They would belong to the Sisterhood, who are long supporters of Baden Street Settlement. And because of the work that they did and began, we are continuing that work, whether it's a fortunate or unfortunate. But we really, the poor is going to be amongst us, and we have a responsibility and an obligation to support our community. Baden Street's luncheon is going to be held at the Holiday Inn downtown this Thursday at noon. And our speaker is the Honorable Crystal People Stokes. And she's our New York State Assembly Majority Leader. We're really excited about her talking about the issues of resilience, sustainability, and our social justice responsibility, and how that role will be played in terms of the legislation that's coming up and the things that are coming up that are that's going to affect our community. And I think we are really excited, and we hope that the community will come out and support and learn a little bit more about what we do at Baden Street. So I'm excited. You can go online to www.badenstreet.org and purchase your tickets. So, and they're $50. They're still reasonable.
They are very much so. B-A-D-E-N. Is Baden Street Settlement, and the majority leader, Crystal People Stokes, is a name our listeners have heard on this program quite a bit in recent weeks because New York State has been debating different forms of legislation, and there's a lot more of an emphasis now on making sure if there's economic development,
absolutely,
that it benefits all communities,
absolutely,
disadvantaged communities historically, communities of color, and the Assembly Majority Leader, Crystal People Stokes, has been at the core of these kinds of proposals. So she will be here on Thursday.
That's right.
As a guest of Baden Street, and you can hear directly from her about how she views this kind of work.
Absolutely. And ask her questions. You know, Baden Street is right in the hardest to serve population. And we serve almost 10,000 people per year. That's a lot of individuals who are in need of our services, including the children that we serve. And also school number 9 is right part of that community, as well as our daycare center. And our children need the support. And Baden Street provides all of those services to those families who are coming into our school communities. So it's very much needed. You know, when you think about a simple thing like, it's not so simple, food. People are hungry. They need a good meal to eat, or they need to be able to get services. They also need clothing. Those kinds of things that Baden can really connect them to, those agencies and the people who are sitting around this table I'm looking at, in terms of our children. After school programs are critical for our kids and our services, of which Pam spent most of her life doing. And also, Pam was also a participant at Baton Street. So the people that we're serving not only live in the community, but they also work at Baton Street. So, and they trust. There's an operative word that we forget. They trust us. They trust to be able to come to somebody and say, I need help. Can you help me? And Baton's response is always, yes, we can.
So, Gaynell, before I turn to our other guests, because everyone at this table has their own stories to share that I think help illustrate the work that Baton is doing, the work that I think our entire community needs to be aware of. I want to ask you, though, Gaynell, when you think about, the mission has changed over 118 years, but really the mission has been steady for a while now at Baton. Is enough changing in this city and in this country to allow more people to live outside of poverty? Is enough changing? Because you're trying to change what society and what has not changed.
Right. I think we have more people who are poor now than we've had before who need our services. We want like to think things have changed for the better. In some ways, you've been on, and just listening to your program over time, we know that things have gotten worse for a lot of people. And the middle class is now becoming the underclass in a lot of ways. So I know where we're located, but don't stop to think that the people from other areas do not come in to Baton Street for their support. I know that because I've lived there. I've also referred people to Baton Street in terms of the services. Because sometimes people are just embarrassed to go to their local communities, whether it's Henrietta, Charlie, etc. They come to where a person can come and speak to them and be safe. And sometimes they feel the safety is at Baton Street. And I think that's why I use the word trust and a critical need that's out there.
And
I think another thing that's important is the fact that we have to understand that Baton Street is centrally located between 9 housing complexes. That's over 33,000 people in one area. So there is a great need.
Yeah, and Gaynell, just to kind of follow that one point, the reason I bring up this question and the reason I think it's so important to hear you say that, it by all accounts here in our city, we see more people living in poverty.
Right.
We have right now a president boasting about low unemployment rates, boasting about some of these economic quote-unquote indicators that have gotten better. I think what they don't do, I think that they are way too narrow in this country, that we're not really taking into account the full picture.
No question. And I think you look, when you dig a little deeper in terms of blacks and Hispanics, they have a high rate of unemployment. And I think we have a responsibility to support those communities of black and Hispanic people to make sure and ensure that they're successful. And that doesn't just mean through jobs, it's through education. And our system of education is really not designed to educate them. And we have a responsibility and an obligation to do so.
Pam, what's your first memory of Baton Street?
Oh, as a little girl coming to Baton Street, going to the day camp program, always having people over there who would guide us and assist us, but making it fun for us.
It was fun.
It was fun, and it was safe.
And now, well, I'd say you're a former now director of the activities and after school program and that department at Baton Street. But over the years, what is a typical day after school in the afternoon hours at Baton Street? Paint a picture for our listeners.
Coming in, possibly going swimming, playing active games, having fun, socializing with my friends, being able to just have fun and a safe haven.
And how does that look today? Roughly the same?
I think it's pretty much the same, but I think we need more in that area of developing programs, expanding what we have, and also our facilities need to be updated.
All right, so they have a lot of needs here. The event on Thursday is a very important day for Baton Street in terms of not only meeting the current needs, but trying to expand the mission. I think everyone at this table, and we kind of talked about it before this program, agrees, it'd be great if Baton Street wasn't needed.
Right.
But it is. And so here we are. And I think, Sarah, I think your story will help us understand some of the work that's being done there. So tell us a little bit about your background before we kind of talk about your parenting work there. And but tell us where you grew up and your, a little bit about your background.
I was born here in Rochester, New York. I was actually raised in Laurel, Maryland. So to see the difference between one city and another, just growing up here up until I was about 9, then I moved down to Maryland just to see the respect and rapport of the teachers in the schools that they have down south compared to up here. There seems to be more communication, more so down south. You know, the teachers have more of a rapport with the kids in the neighborhoods, and they know where they come from. Here in Rochester, it seems as though parents are allowing their children to do what they want to do versus doing what's required of them, which is to go to school and get an education and be a successful citizen in the United States of America. Just to be here in Rochester again, I came back in 2005. to be here again and to see and be a part of Baden has been wonderful for me. You know, I was a citizen in the city before I became a parent. So just being around the facility and getting to know some of the people who work there, they kind of guided me and showed me the way of where I needed to send my son. You know, there's different facilities he could have attended, but Baden is more of a home-based facility. You know, there's people who work there who are related to each other. They know the vicinity around them. They know where they're located, right on between Joseph and Clinton Avenue, which is the heart of where things are going wrong nowadays. So,
and so your son's 4 years old?
Yes, he is.
What's a typical kind of week look like in terms of his participation at Baden?
They keep him very busy. They're teaching him very well. And as far as the academic part of it goes, he does have a lot of fun in school. He's making a lot of friends. He's very sociable now. He's in tune with the teachers. The teachers are in tune with him versus him just being one student in the classroom. They have a rapport with him as a student. They know him by his first name. They know certain things that go along with him and his behaviors and things of that nature. They're in tune with the students that go there.
Does it feel a little bit more like what you experienced in Maryland?
Yes, it's more of a home base versus just a facility that we're attending, yeah. And when the day is over, we're leaving.
What is a weekday schedule from? How long is he at Baden?
He goes, school starts at 9 and school lets out at 3, so he's there, you know, throughout the day. He has a lot of good things to say about how nice his teachers are. Again, he's making new friends every day.
Such an important age.
Yes.
And clearly, at his age, you know, he's getting kind of a head start. We talk a lot in this country about the need at 3, 4 Absolutely. Years old before they even get to kindergarten. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen when he's 5, 6 years old? Where's he going to go to school?
He's going to be going to World of Inquiry for school. So, and he's looking forward to that. He learned a lot in pre-K at Baden Street. They taught him his academics as well as his social skills as well, being nice to his teachers and being nice to his friends and actually taking them on walks in the community so they can see, you know, what's going on around them and letting them know that there's a difference between what you see in the world and what you're being taught in the classroom.
Okay. When you think about his future, whether it's right now and then when you think as he gets older into adolescence, the teenage years to come, what worries you the most?
Society, what's going on in the outside world today. So I do think that the classroom is a very strong place and a strong foundation where teachers should be teaching the students what's going on in the world today. I mean, I know he's 4, but teach him a little bit about politics and what's going on and things of that nature, because what I teach him at home and what the world is teaching him right now, it seems to be two totally different things.
What is... You know, for a 4-year-old, what is the level that you're comfortable talking? You're clearly getting to a point where he's 4. You know, he's not a baby anymore.
Right.
It sounds like you want to tell him a little bit more about how you see the world.
I mean, and as a parent, it's my job to make sure that he knows right from wrong. He knows what he should and should not be doing. But again, I can only teach him so much at home. Once I open my front door and allow him to go to school or go to daycare, whatever the case may be, they're teaching him something different. So it's important to instill the positive at home and make sure that you're sending him to the proper facilities when he's not home so that he's still learning the right way and the right things to do versus just sending him anywhere because you have to work or you have things to do and you can't really tend to your child at the time. Make sure you place him somewhere where he's still learning the proper things that you're trying to teach at home.
What do you want for his future? What do you hope for him?
To be a successful black man in America. I mean, there's a lot of challenges that he's going to face as he gets older. He just has to have the proper support around him, and I think Baden is a wonderful place to start.
I think that's to be a, when you say to be a successful black man in America, right. and then you immediately kind of turn to, he's going to have challenges in front of him. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you first how you view those challenges, in particular to black men in this country.
I actually just found out that two close friends of mine passed away this weekend due to gun violence. And I'm not happy with that, and I'm kind of fearful, even though my son's only four and these young men were in their early 20s, that's just a mirror image of what he may possibly have to endure when he gets older. So again, it's all about the beginning foundation of where you start. It starts at home, but then from home you have to make sure that you're branching them out to the proper locations where they're going to learn, again, right from wrong. I mean, every child isn't taught the proper things at home. You know, you have to, once they step into that building, there has to be teachers there and people who understand that this child is coming from poverty. So we can't really lean on the poverty portion of it, but show them that there's other parts of life besides what you're enduring at home. And if you get the proper education, if you come to school to learn and not cause issues, or, you know, not really want to be there, but you're actually there to learn what's being taught to you, you don't have to fall into the realm of what society has going on right now.
Do you think there's a lot of pressure, though, to kind of go in some of those directions? Even if you're taught well at home, even with you as mom, yes. is there pressure? Is there going to be pressure?
Yes, there's going to always be pressure. Again, some children have the mindset of they were raised and taught the proper things, but just as who they are and what life is influencing on them, they choose to turn the other cheek and go in the direction where things won't be so positive. So it's just a matter of making sure you keep those positive people around you in your circle to push you in the right direction.
And I think the other thing, too, is that we have to make sure we have safe havens. Right. I've seen kids get off the school bus right. and have to pull the pants down and turn the hats around and hide their books just to walk through the neighborhood.
Right.
So you don't want them to become victims either, because bullying is alive and it is growing. Right. So we have to provide those loving and safe havens for kids to go to. When you go down Clinton Avenue and you see those kids standing out in their corners and doing negative stuff sometimes, they don't represent all of the kids that live in the neighborhood.
That's right.
In fact, it's a very small percentage. But we can't let our communities identify with those kids. And those kids, too, somewhere along the line, we've got to supply support services to get them off of those streets.
That's a powerful point. You want to add to that, Kano?
No, children shouldn't have to walk through the neighborhood. We should really have, for safety, we should have busing for our children for school, especially younger kids. You know, when you think about, even during the wintertime, how do they walk on sidewalks that are not cleaned off or curbs? So, you know, I really am an advocate to have our children, all our children, bus to school in the morning. Now, that may not be popular, but it's safe. And I think that, to me, is very important in supporting the after-school programs for the kids. Parents, all parents want their children to be successful. And we tend not to think about it. Oh, this parent doesn't care because of it. All parents love their children, and all parents want the best for them. So if we operate on that, then we can begin to look at those strategies to put in place to make sure they're successful. And that's what we do at Baden Street. We want to make sure and ensure that all these children are self and feel secure and at least can go to another adult. And I think that's critical when you talk about, you know, the children on the corners of the street. Somebody didn't make them feel safe. Somebody didn't.
As a parent, I agree.
Absolutely. And I think if we had more services, though, you would probably see less people on the street. And I think that, to me, becomes critical. We should have evening programs. Actually, the police department used to have, my friend Annie Craven Walker, they used to have midnight basketball. That was extremely popular. Where did the money go? How come we don't have those resources? We had youth officers to integrate and support these young people on the street. I know that's what she did. Why aren't we doing some of those things that worked? We got rid of a lot of things that worked. For what reason? And we really need to re-examine and look at those things that work. We know Head Start works.
It does.
We know it works. So why is it that we have to fight to get it or keep it? We shouldn't have to do that.
And I think our guests are painting an important picture to try to get in its totality, because what I'm hearing from Sarah, for instance, is, you know, thinking about her four-year-old as he gets older, what are the pressures of society going to be? When Pam talks about, you know, a group of kids who may bully or give other kids a hard time if they're carrying books, if it looks like they're studious, Pam's not saying that's everybody. Pam's saying that's a small part of the population, but that's powerful. It's strong. Absolutely. There's a lot of pressure with that. And my guess is, and I'd like to hear from all of you on this, because this is not my experience. I mean, I've been a very, very fortunate person, a very advantaged person in my life. I try to listen to people from different backgrounds and experiences. And Sarah, what I often hear is, you know, you can work so hard to raise kids, to instill values, to teach them about the value of education,
yes,
but they have to believe that they will have a chance in society to, if they want to go to higher education, if they want to work, if they want to get a good job, if they work hard, that it will pay off. They have to believe that that will happen.
Yes.
And if they don't, then a lot of the work that you do and your teachers may do and Baden Street Settlement may do could be for naught if they don't believe it. Are you concerned that, especially because you brought up young black men and that's going to be your son, do you worry that they don't believe that there's a path?
I do worry. And I think that comes from not having enough people around them that believe in them as well. I mean, some of these behaviors are learned behaviors, are taught behaviors. They have to learn to believe in themselves. And they can't learn that on their own. Someone has to teach them how to believe in themselves. So if you have enough people around you that's saying, you're going to be successful, I'm going to put you in the right position so that you can be successful in kindergarten, or you like basketball, I'm going to put you in the right position where you can start with a junior varsity team and make it to the NBA if that's what you want. But you have to have a solid foundation. And the foundation isn't just start at home. It's in the school and the other activities that you place your children in as well. Again, some people just say, go to the rec center because I don't want you to be home. But what's going on at that rec center? Are there people there who's actually teaching those children how to be successful adults in the world, whether you're a male or a female? Are they just there to receive the paycheck and monitor and see how many children come to the door? It's all about a community effort.
And sometimes it takes us believing in the kids first,
right,
so that they can begin to believe in themselves.
Yes, ma'am.
Gaynell, how do you feel about kids and what they think about themselves and the world that they see?
I think it's critical. We have to give them a vision. And it goes along with what Sarah's saying. Most often they don't have a vision, but parents might give them the vision. It's a school. All the other people that come in their lives recognize the skill, the leadership skills. You know, I had someone say, he's acting like a bully. Well, you're a leader. Let's transfer and take a look at that. That means you can lead. Let's see if you can lead a group and then have them do something different to really reinforce that leadership skill. That's what Pam's group, when she was director of activities, that's what they were looking for in those kids, those leadership skills, or those other skills that students have or kids have that we don't often really lift up. You know, I know we got mathematicians in it. I know we got engineers. We have future journalists in that group, write a story, but we do not lift those things up. But that's what Pam's activities department, that's young adults on the move, to show them that they can be successful. And what's out there, they can really do some different things, entrepreneurship, but talk to them. And we talk to them to find out, what's your dream? If we keep talking and asking them what they dream, they may not know it. And some people, I don't know what I want to do. Well, let's talk a little bit more about it. We need to have those conversations that you and I had when we were growing up in terms of our family. Remember, we don't have the extended family that we once had before with community. But Baden has become the extended family for most of these kids. So Pam and them know their families. If you talk to Pam, she knows all the names. When we connected to the women with the sisters from the sisterhood, my father had a shop here on this street. Pam can tell you all the names. So I think those are the things that people, when they connect and they know the background of families and the contributions that they made, we have to do that with our kids. And I think that's what Baden does. Can you tell them about Baden Street Settlement? because it's a silent institution in a lot of ways, and we take for granted that institution. And I go back to, I would have never gotten involved, but I'm from New Orleans, and I've shared that before. The group of women, my mother, they were educated women. These were all college graduated. We had a responsibility for the black middle class to give back to the community. And that's what we've forgotten. So they started a Head Start program at the Settlement House in New Orleans, Louisiana. The names are on the wall there. So when I came here, I got reengaged through another group of middle-class white females, and they got me involved. So I know what my mission is. We have got to give back. Those of us who have more have to give back to those who do not. And I think we have forgotten to do that. And it's through your checks, whether you attend the luncheon, it's through helping us with resources for the students. Very minimal. It doesn't have to be a lot, but you have to care.
Gaynell's talking about the fact that they need you on Thursday to be at their annual community meeting and luncheon. And that's this Thursday and starts at noon?
That's correct.
Noon at the Holiday Inn downtown on State Street right here in Rochester. $50 a person. Tickets are available now. You can contact Gaynell at the Baden Street Settlement of Rochester. Easy to find online as well.
Absolutely. And we give back to the community. Our events are really held within the community of the city of Rochester, because that's what we believe in, to save our city and support our city.
In our second half hour, we're going to hear Mr. Hardy's story, because we've been talking about kids and what happens when kids are grown up, and the challenges and the pressures and what poverty can do as it sort of infringes on their development. But I want to ask, Sarah, in your own life, what do you want? You know, we've talked about what you want for your son, because you're a mom, but what do you want for you?
I've been working with Baden for about a year now. July will make a year. And I started out just as a parent, dropping my son off at daycare, applying him for school, having him go to school there. They actually offered me an opportunity to work with them. And I worked through the camp last summer, and it was wonderful. It was wonderful for me. It was wonderful for the kids, because I'm one of those parents who I'm in tune with the children in our community. If you look sad, or you look like, you know, you see your friend with some new shoes on, but your shoes aren't new, and I can kind of read it on your face, I'm going to interact with you. I'm going to let you know that it's okay. The shoes aren't what's important. Can you hoop in those shoes? You know, can you run a race in those shoes? As long as they work, we'll get you some new shoes later on. You know, so you got to kind of be open to what Baden is offering you. I'm currently enrolled in school because of Baden. I'm graduating in May. My son is doing well in school. He's growing in society as well as in Baden itself. So Baden offers a lot. It offers, but you just have to be willing to accept what they're offering you and be able to sit down and listen to what they have. Everything is not going to be for you. So just see what they have to offer and take what you need, and make sure that, like Ms. Gaynell said, make sure you're able to give back to the community. I can't give you any money, but I can give you the knowledge that Baden has given me while I've been a part of their facility.
Sure, and you've got a remarkable mindset. In 5 years, in 10 years, you'd love to be doing what? What does your life look like if you're happy?
Right now I'm going down the path of becoming a teacher, but I prefer to be a counselor. I'd rather talk one-on-one with the kids again, because I've experienced a lot in my 35 years of living. And a lot hasn't been spoke on, but I can relate to a lot of the children nowadays as to what they're going through, single-family home, not really having the latest or the most updated, but knowing that you're worth more than that. You're worth more than a pair of sneakers. You're worth more than the latest jacket or the latest hairstyle. If you work hard to get what you want, you can create your own sneakers. You can create your own latest hairstyle or get your own clothing line going, but you have to, again, have the proper people around you to guide you in the right direction.
And what do you think our society most often gets wrong when they think about poverty?
People being poor, people stealing, people not being honest about what's going on. And some people live in poverty and want to do right. They want the outcome to be positive, but they don't have the proper people around them, again, guiding them in the right direction to get them where they need to be. Everybody can be a president. Anybody can be a president, but you have to have the proper support around you to help you get there.
What do you think people get wrong about poverty?
Well, the biggest thing, I think, is they think that people don't want to work.
Right.
And they do want to work. I think Baden Street has the challenge to teach families and kids values and preparation. How do I overcome some of these handicaps? And I do think that we think that people are lazy and, you know, but without the right support systems, these people will never overcome.
Okay, what do you think, Janelle?
We're uneducated, and that's not true. We're very smart, brilliant people. Education just helps you get a degree. It doesn't mean that you're intellectually smart. And we tend to look at blacks as being uneducated instead of speaking and talking and finding out a little bit more about who they are. I used to say, you know, it used to be the speaking the dozens, you know, those were poems. Go back and listen to the old songs, you know, they're poems, they're written. And I think we totally misjudge people. And I think it's wrong. We have to find out, you know, who we are as a people and as a community.
Can you tell me, before we go to break, a little bit about what you think about Mr. Hardy? Who's Mr. Hardy?
Mr. Hardy is this young man sitting next to me.
He is this young man sitting next to me.
And I call people of his wisdom and stature young.
Yeah.
Right? You like that, Mr. Hardy, right?
I sure do.
As a former student of Latin, I use younger and youngest. And Sarah's the youngest here. But I think thinking about our young people like Mr. Hardy as being wise, understanding what their vision was and continues to be, and what is his hope for our future. Because we tend to think that, you know, they don't think the way I don't want them to think the way I want him to. I want to know what he thinks we should be doing. And we don't often give young people like Mr. Hardy the respect that's due, because they've lived in a different world. But yet there's some things that are consistent in our worlds that we can learn from him. So I'm quite interested in our young Mr. Hardy, what he has to say.
Well, let's get that break of the hour. We're going to come back and we're going to grill young Mr. Hardy. And we're going to talk more about the work that Baden Street Settlement does. This is a conversation about an organization that is getting ready to mark 118 years in Rochester. And they're doing some work in communities that need it desperately. You heard Gaynell Weathers say earlier this hour, they're doing as much as they absolutely can, even at a time when there's a lot of funding cuts in different places and different areas across our communities. Baden Street is trying to help in some of the most impoverished parts of Rochester, and they're doing remarkable work. So let's go ahead and take that break. We'll come back with Gaynell Weathers, Pam Jackson. You heard Sarah Cheek, a parent of a child in the Baden Street Settlement's preschool program, and Theodore Ted Mr. Hardy is going to talk to us next year, a board member and a longtime supporter of the settlement and a user of Baden Street's senior services. Let's get that break and come right back. Coming up in our second hour, the annual performance called Listen to Your Mother is getting ready to come back to Rochester. It always happens on or around Mother's Day. The stories of moms, people who have had stories that they want to share about their own mothers, the mothers in their lives, and there are always tears, there's always laughter, and we're going to hear about Rochester's place with Listen to Your Mother next up. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and Ted Hardy, known as Mr. Hardy, who is a board member and a longtime supporter of the Baden Street Settlement, is one of our guests this hour. Mr. Hardy, you started attending and being a part of Baden Street when? What do you remember?
1956.
1956.
Yes.
How different was our community then?
Well, I just came from the South. I was born and raised in Florida, and I came to this great city called Rochester, and I wanted to know, you know, where would be a safe place I could go. And they said, go over to Baden Street. So they was located the same place there on Vienna. And I went over on Baden Street in 1956. And we could have games and all that stuff, play basketball. And it was a safe haven. And we would be out of there by 10 o'clock. And I never thought, in my wildest dreams, that I would be coming back to Baden Street again in my life. But I was gone. I was in the military for 21 years. I worked at the Association for the Blind for 39 years. And all of a sudden, in 2000, I retired. And I said, boy, I got all this time to do. I got on my hand now. And I found myself lost for things to do. And someone said, why don't you try Baden Street over there? I said, what they got over there? Bunch of women?
Okay, sorry.
That's true. That's exactly what I said. And the guy said, well, go over there and see. They got a pool table over there. So I go over, And we shoot pool, and then all of a sudden the guy said, you want to play some cards? I said, yeah, I don't mind playing a little cards. And I did. And I found myself missing those guys and the girls. And I found myself, if the 5 days out of the week the center was open, my time was occupied. And all of a sudden on Saturday and Sunday, I said, God, did I not open on Saturday and Sunday? I can't wait for Monday to come. Mm-hmm. And all because the people that was around me, and I had missed them, and I want you to know that you missed those people. And, you know, we had activities going on Monday through Friday. Mondays, you know, I was just saying that we had, like, a choir time that we speak on the Bible. We're very religious over there for some reason. And then Wednesdays, the food truck come in, and they go out there, and they can do their little shopping. Thursdays, they go all over the city to different stores and all that. And on Fridays, we can take in movies or stuff like that, or go on trips down. Or we might go down to the winery, or we might, it's no telling. Wherever we see on the schedule, we make arrangements and we go, and we're very happy about it. And now right now, they'll probably miss me. We find ourselves, if so-and-so is not there, what's happening? Is they sick or something? Hmm. You find yourself concerned about the people. Hmm. And you know, here I am, I'm 81 years old, and I said, I never thought I'd make 81. But Baden Street was the foundation for me in Rochester. And when I was out, I worked those 39 years at the Blind, I said I would donate my money for Baden Street and the community chest. And that was my way of giving back. And right to this day, I think about it constantly. And whenever I'm around people, I say, that Baden Street played a part in my life. Mm-hmm. And I hope it play a part in your little yes, 4-year-old life.
Yeah, it already is, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And you imagine when you're 4-year-olds, it's impossible to think of our kids as eventually being
81. Wow.
It's going to happen at some point.
Yes, I know.
It's coming.
Or any of us.
It's coming. Mr. Hardy, can I ask you, if you came to Rochester in 1956?
56.
1956, so 63 years later. If you see our city as, and I don't mean to be sort of, I'm not leading any direction, I'm asking an honest question. Are we still a city that is largely segregated? Are we a city that is that offers equal opportunity? Because in the 1940s and 50s in particular, there were a lot of black families that moved to Rochester, right, as they did from the South, mm-hmm, as they moved north looking for jobs and work. Redlining happened, economic right, dispossession mm-hmm happened. And, you know, Rochester has a rough history with that, as a lot of northern cities, a lot of American cities do. But how different does it feel today, if that much? How do you see the difference between 1956 and 2019?
Well, 1956, where I was living on Nassau Street. Nassau Street is, maybe 3 blocks down from Baden Street there. Mm. And at that time, it was a lot of Jewish population there. They had the grocery stores and all. And I could do all my shopping there and all that. North Street was mostly Italians, and that would go all over to the public market, all in Central Park, all that. That was all Italian. If I go down Hudson, going towards Norton, it was Polish. And we would know, we had little boundaries there that we'd go as far as Avenue D and we'll turn around, because that's how the sections were set up. Now, today now, all of those areas that I just named is mostly black and Puerto Rican. We didn't have like the suburbs and all that stuff. That was in the making. But I see now that some of that is coming back. Some of the white population is coming back into the city. It's not as noticeable, except for people like my age. I look at that and I say, they're coming back. Because I know when they left out of there. I remember when I was a kid on Joseph Avenue, I could do all my shopping on Joseph. Mm-hmm. You remember that, Japan?
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm.
What happened there was in 1964, we had the riot. The riot really mm-hmm did a lot of harm to us. because that was gone. And then I think maybe 3 or 4 years after, we had another riot, and that really destroyed. We just, you had to go uptown or go to the suburbs for shopping and all that. And a lot of people always had a problem with transportation. And you know, to get out to the suburbs, you had to have some kind of means. A lot of people didn't have the automobile and all that stuff, so they were sort of stranded. Now I see where they do it with the food link. They do bring food out, and they try to have it as fresh as possible, and we're grateful about that. But those are some of the changes that I see. Mm.
And when you talk about those parts of the city that you remember being, you know, more of a Polish neighborhood here or an Italian neighborhood here that are largely today black and Latino.
Right.
Why do you think those predominantly European and white populations left?
Well, they had the suburbs. Well, some of them were just afraid for the mixture. Some was, I guess they did better. They were probably making more money. It was all about finances. Because you figure, you think what the cost of living is to be going out every day to go from the city out to the suburbs and back and vice versa. It had to cost money. A lot of the blacks, they couldn't afford it, so they would remain where they were. And plus, you might as well face it, it's a lot of people didn't care about certain people of color, and they didn't want you into their neighborhood. And they had ways of doing it. It was it wasn't written, but you know, you had that feeling when you go and apply for certain positions or jobs or something like that. That's the reason that a lot of people, when they got a job, like I told you, I stayed at my job for 39 years. It was secure. A lot of people, whatever they got on the job, they stayed there because it wasn't that easy going out to find another job. Like with some people, it was just, you stick to where you're at and you feel more safe. Military, I spent 21 years in the military. That was supposed to be a haven, and it was, because it was things that they didn't approve of there, and they stuck to it. Whereas here in the city, you had to face that. You had to face certain unwritten laws there.
And so now let me ask all of you this, and I'll start with Ted on this. You know, political leaders in Western New York talk about development. They talk about projects, economic development, and jobs. And, you know, historically in this country, what we see are downtown areas that often where the big projects go, whether it's housing or you know, proposals for sort of high dollar value projects. And then the question becomes, how do you get an entire city to benefit? Can you either bring development to different neighborhoods, different sections of the city? Is there transportation so people can work? Do people have access to jobs? Because if you've got one section of a city that's where development's happening, but you have a lot of residents who cannot access them, it's not a whole city that's benefiting. And I wonder, are we starting to see more integration? Are we starting to see, or do we still see a disconnect, Ted, in terms of what is being developed in the city? Is it just, you know, sort of downtown? Is it just in certain sections versus everywhere?
Yeah. Well, a lot of times a bunch of us guys would hang at McDonald's, and we'll see, as people come in to work, we see them coming from the suburbs, driving in, and they're going downtown, and they got a good job downtown. 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we see a reverse. We see them driving out, they're going back out to the suburb. And we sit around there and we kid each other and say, wonder what are we benefiting from that? We're not, because I said, they don't even buy gas here in the city. Mm-hmm. They don't utilize the grocery stores and all of that. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, businesses they reflect on sales and all that. So if ain't nobody buying nothing, they eventually they're gonna move out, because it's dollars and cents. You know, it's common sense. How can we get them that come in here and get spent and earn their money, but they go back out to suburbs and spend it?
That's right. Hmm.
Gaynell, how do you view that?
You really want to know?
I do.
Well, just to build on this, I buy my gas in the city. And I intentionally make decisions personally to do certain things. And I do. I need to say that. I think it, our younger man over here is absolutely correct. If you think about it, and I'll pick on, you know, if your budget in an institution is almost $1 billion, it's housed here in the city, and the people who work for you live in the city, I wonder how much money. Think about the economic gains that would have instead of that $1 billion going back out to the suburbs. That's powerful. We really need to begin to look at our institutions that are of employment in terms of, do they reside in the city where the money needs to be spent? And I think that's what we need to begin to think about. I'm not an expert in development, so I'm not going to, get people to complain. But it's just the thought and the concept. And, you know, Bain Street needs its new buildings. Who's going to help us get that capital improvement? Who do we go to help us really shore up this community? And so that's the challenge we face. I used to be on the board, so now I work for Bain Street, and I'm committed to making that happen. I can make my own personal commitment to the city by not just purchasing things, but I'm a conscious in terms of my decision and leave my money, you know, to Bain Street. And I still give my money to Bain Street. I think it's critical for people and the powers that be to think about how we are employing people. A simple thing like me, when I'm looking at construction, I look at, is the construction guys diverse? Do they have women? Do they have minorities? Are they working for the city? Where are they employed? I think we got to, you know, Mr. Hardy was talking about the Bible, but the blind can't see if you're not looking at it, you know, and you have to begin to see what's happening. We've lost our major institutions, Kodak, but, you know, through Kay Whitmore, we had volunteerism. He ensured that the volunteers were throughout the community and giving back. Mm-hmm. Today, people are afraid to leave their jobs to come to a board meeting or volunteer because of whatever we have going on in our climate. So the challenges that we face, but we haven't used the word racism, but racism is a part of. I've listened to the younger people, younger professionalism. They talk about the segregation in Rochester. We also are trying to get young people to stay here. What do we have to offer them? And I think that's the challenge we face, and we need to be honest with each other and have those tough conversations. What can we do? So, you know, I throw that out in terms of just to begin to think about how we personally do things and also how we professionally develop that. So I'll let the other younger folks.
Well, growing up at Bain Street and being a product of Bain Street, I like to think about the people who are left here that we need to deal with. And I remember growing up, I come from a family of 16. My mother had 6 sets of twins and 4 singles. And my father worked every day at Hickox. My mother worked on the weekends. And I remember Bain Street was the extended family because growing up, we knew we could never go to college or anything because my father didn't make enough. He was just barely making enough to take care of our family. I remember living on the other side of town, and I remember we getting evicted, and then they built the Hanover houses. That was the best thing that ever happened to us. We didn't have to worry about heat anymore. We had a home to go to. The people, they were families and things. But as we go on now and we talk about what it is we need, Rochester has changed. Right. You know, when I was a little girl, downtown was the biggest business district. And the next one was Joseph Avenue. And they flourished. And we lost all of that. And we lost that because of the riots. But think about it now. Even poor people have to go to the suburbs to shop. There are no big stores in the inner cities. Right. There are no clothing stores in the inner cities and stuff. Even our money goes out to the suburbs. Right. A lot of people work in the inner city, but their money goes out to the suburbs on Friday. So in the inner city, we suffer. We're paying our dues, but we suffer. And I think that we have to start looking at, when we talk about jobs for poor people and stuff like that, the job readiness program, preparing people for the jobs. Because people just can't walk in the door and do everything. We are in a computer world, and computers are good, but computers are also bad. Mm-hmm. I look at our kids now, when we talk about physical fitness and all of that, sitting at that computer all day, but mm-hmm. the body is not developing the way that it needs to develop. There are a lot of things that we have to reevaluate and come out with those kinds of programs and things that will help us to get to the next step.
I can't believe it's been an hour. We should have done both hours on this. So before I let you go, I'm going to tell you one more time. Jump online to learn not only more about what Baden Street is and the mission, but what they have coming up on Thursday. It's their annual community meeting and luncheon. The majority leader of the New York State Assembly, Crystal Peoples-Stokes, will be here. She is at the core of a lot of very important legislative efforts. That's at noon. The Holiday Inn downtown, and information online at Baden Street's website. You can get more information there, and they hope to see you. And I know they appreciate you being there. I want to thank all of our guests for being here. Gaynell Weathers, Pam Jackson, Mr. Hardy, Sarah Cheek. Thanks to all of you. Good luck to all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing your insight. More connections coming up.